Listen to the words of old Dan English of Lawton View, Oklahoma, as he tells us how he feels today.
I feel much helped up, and I'm 70 years old, and I expect to go from Lawton View to heaven. And I believe that's going to be a little heaven here on earth for me.
A little heaven on earth. Today, that's how Dan English feels about his hometown of Lawton View. But it wasn't always so. This, then, is the story of how Dan English and his neighbors have found a new kind of comfort and contentment in their town.
Living 1951, in cooperation with the 20th Century Fund, presents the seventh in a series of transcribed programs entitled The People Act, designed to show how your fellow Americans are uniting in democratic ways to solve for themselves the problems of living. This program we call The Women Did It. Your narrator, Ben Grauer.
Greetings, America. Lawton View is a suburb of Lawton, Oklahoma, which this year celebrates its 50th anniversary. There are commonly three interesting things about Lawton. First, it was opened to settlement by lottery. Second, its citizens annually perform an Easter pageant enacting all the biblical roles themselves. Finally, it is the home of Fort Sill, the only field artillery center of the U.S. Army. But let Elmore McKee, our field reporter who was there, tell you what we found interesting about Lawton.
The women of Lawton. Here, in a state where women are not called for jury duty, a group of women judged a situation for themselves, decided what needed to be done, and within the democratic framework of a free country, went ahead and did it. For the whole inspiring story, as we heard and recorded it from the lips of the people of Lawton, I return you to Ben Grauer.
Where Lawton, Oklahoma stands today, there was only prairie in 1901. There wasn't a single house. By 1948, 28,000 people. And the city they called Lawton there in Comanche County had grown up into two Lawtons. Lawton proper, a pleasant and proud community, and Lawton View, outside the city limits. 1 square mile of no man's land, formed of shacks of tar paper, scrap lumber, cardboard, and chicken wire. A dark and dangerous eyesore, whose people seemingly didn't count and actually weren't counted in Lawton's census. In the words of longtime resident Tom Hooker,
"It's my mud hole most of the year, whenever it's wet and damp, and the rest of the time, why, it's a dust, sort of a dust bowl, flies and filth and everything else."
But the two communities, one unkempt, the other clean, oddly enough had one thing in common: lack of adequate police protection. Concerned for their children, the women of Lawton proper, the women in whose homes the Lawton viewers often worked as household helpers, called a meeting of the women's clubs. Mrs. Gibb was there.
"We decided we could do something that was effective if we all banded together in one organization. This we did and called it the Woman's Forum."
Thus, for their own welfare, did the women of Lawton come together. And not one suspected that the story we bring you today was to spring from that meeting. But soon the forum organized into groups to explore the total needs of the community. One such group, the Welfare Department, sponsored by the local McMahon Foundation, engaged professionals to survey the town's confused welfare problem. Reporter Lindsay Whitten, who wrote the ladies up for the Constitution, remembers that now historic survey very well.
"One thing the survey made us realize was the health of the city as a whole could be no better than the health of Lawton View.
Faced with this fact, that the health safety of one depends upon the health of the other, at the annual breakfast of the Women's Forum, rose small but dynamic Mrs. Roy Emery, welfare chairman. As she recalls it for us,
I could hardly believe my ears when I heard myself saying, the next project of the welfare department is Lawton View.
Keep your ear on Mrs. Emery, America. Listen to her as we did as she describes how the idea scarcely began to percolate when one day
I got a telephone call.
I was the woman who called Mrs. Emery. My name is Lula Moore, and I do social work in Lawton View.
Yes, the voice of Lula Moore herself.
I told Mrs. Emery that on the last night there had been a terrible fire, and there seemed that everything those people had were lost. I told her that I thought it was about time that the city would get in and do something to save those people from losing everything they had in so many fires. I told her that I didn't have any influence, but she would have, or she knew ladies that would have.
Moved by this appeal, Mrs. Emery asked, "Are you going to be home tomorrow afternoon?" "Yes, ma'am," answered Lula Moore. "Good, we'll look the place over together. I'll be down to pick you up with my vice chairman, Mrs. Weller." Turn your attention now to music teacher Mrs. Weller, Mrs. Emery's active partner and companion on that first inspection of Lawton View. Listen to her description of how what they saw with Lula Moore affected her.
I'll never forget the first trip I made to Lawton View, really to look at the situation. We'd had people from there working in our homes, but I had never actually looked over the places where they live very carefully before. There were shacks built of straightened tin cans and cardboard and rolls of barbed wire and garbage and refuse of every sort piled in the streets, which were full of holes. And altogether, it was just an unspeakable situation.
In the midst of the debris, they talked to the forgotten people in this forgotten borderland, as we did later, and recorded what they heard for you. Old, gnarled Dan English, who once hauled water to the waterless residents.
We go to get water at Mr. Cannon Feed Store. I gave a nickel for a barrel of water, and at first I got in at 20 cents a barrel. And you never get paid for that barrel sometimes. Therefore, you're just accommodating the people by taking money out of your pocket, hauling water, your time, and feeding your horse. So I cut out hauling water for custom. Only haul water for myself and family now.
They heard Sophia Edwards tell of the hardships of a housewife in a waterless community.
You can't have sufficient water to use in your kitchen for your cooking purposes and cleaning purposes. You can't have it to wash and keep your clothes and your house clean. And you don't have any water around to raise anything.
But what especially hit home were not these stories, nor the dangers lurking at night in unlighted streets, but, just as Mrs. Moore warned them, the awful tales of burnouts. Yes, fire after fire, with no water to put them out, and Lawton's fire department unable to reach them in time to do much with a 200-gallon truck.
Our school building burned, and there was nothing that we could do but just to stand and watch it go down.
I had a burnout in 48. My wife and I and children were all in bed. And we had to get up and get all the children together, and we ran for the front door. We just had to feel our way out. And we didn't save anything.
Everything that I had was burned up at one time. My husband was feeling around in the rubbish and found the zip off his Sunday pants. No Sunday pants for my husband were left.
The three women, Lulu Moore, Mrs. Emery, and Mrs. Weller walked back to their car and climbed in. They drove back to Lawton, but it wasn't in silence. Mrs. Moore remembers it well.
The greatest civic meeting I ever attended was in that car with Mrs. Waller and Mrs. Emery, because in that car, we planned a new Lawton View.
Planning a new Lawton View is one thing. Bringing it into existence is another. The women bring fire department officials out to tell a meeting of Lawton viewers how they can secure a measure of fire protection through the purchase of fire bombs. They also promote a cleanup campaign, only to discover city rules will not permit city trucks to pick up the garbage there. Disgusted and impatient with their slow progress, one day they meet Paul Busby, a lawyer, who gives them, free for nothing, this sound advice.
I told the women they were on the wrong track, that they could never hope to do anything to accomplish their purposes until such time as Lawton View was brought into the city limits of Lawton. Only by bringing Lawton View Addition into the city could the city give them the relief they sought.
Now, here was an idea. Get Lawton to adopt its neglected offspring. Legally bring it into the city limits. Then will have to come water, electricity, sewers. Then almost all of Lawton View's immediate problems would be solved in one fell swoop. City Attorney Godlove tells them how to do it. By petition. Eagerly, the women draw up such a petition for the citizens of Lawton View to sign. Turn it over to respected citizens of Lawton View, like Lewis Baker.
I had a hard time for the first time from signing a petition, or they'd been informed that they would lose their homes. But on the second time I made the trip, that I had 9 out of every 10 to sign for the petition of city limit.
Tom Hooker, unlike Lewis Baker, doesn't have any trouble getting the residents to sign, but does confess to a different problem.
Well, I circulated the petition and secured as many names as possible, but I failed to pay too much attention to the legal qualifications.
Remember that phrase, legal qualifications. For innocent of the required property status of the signers, the women sent the signed petitions on to the city officials and impatiently awaited the next council meeting. As Mrs. Weller tells the story,
Mrs. Emery had to be away and insisted that I attend a meeting of the council. I didn't want to go at all because I'd never attended a meeting of the council before, but due to her insistence, I persuaded a very good friend, Mrs. Ford H. Mugg, to go with me. We sort of sneaked in the back and sat in the back seat, and very quietly and inconspicuously. But our presence was noticed by the mayor, and he inquired if we had something that we'd like to present to the council. We said no. We were simply there in interest of the Lawton View petition.
Day follows weary day, and the women learn what distilled frustration dwells in the term under advisement. Not only was the property status of certain signers held in question, but another, even more serious difficulty arose just as the committee was pressing for council action.
No sooner had we got well underway till an opposition petition was circulating, and a good many of them that signed our petition was persuaded to sign the opposition. Of course, that nullified their names on both petitions.
Many of the signatures, no good. Invalid because of legal qualifications. Not from any lack of interest, but rather from a sheer excess of zeal for the cause. To other, less determined women, this perhaps might have spelled the end. But not to the women of Lawton. They pick up and start all over again. This time, with women like Mrs. Ethel Hopp, searching records in the courthouse, and others contacting absentee owners of Lawton View property. Tom Hooker again makes his appointed rounds.
Every time I'd get one or two prominent names on there, I'd use that as a lever to get someone else. I'd go to another man that I'm the man in town that owned property out here, and I'd casually let him know that so-and-so had signed it, and almost invariably he'd sign it.
Thus do the women place a new petition in the hands of the council. And I'm sure we don't have to tell you that when the council meets again, the women are there. Mrs. Emery is speaking.
We nervously sat through their whole meeting as they went through all the other business. Finally, it came our turn, and they called us forward as little children to tell us all the objections that they had.
Yes, the financial burden will be too heavy, or there's too little tax from the area, or people forced to leave their homes for falling down on payments. Many would be unable to pay their water bill, even if water were brought out there. Finally, Mrs. Weller, standing at Mrs. Emery's side, can stand it no longer. Pulling herself up to her full 5 feet, she exclaims, as we recorded it for you,
"Listen, you've given us all the reasons why this thing cannot be done. Isn't there at least one good reason why it can and should be done?"
It is Mayor Glenn who brings the arguments to an end.
"I told Mrs. Weller it was about time that we call a mass meeting in Lawton View to go over this whole program. I asked them if we would call such a meeting, would they attend? And they said they would be glad to."
Hear this meeting, called by the mayor in Lawton View, as it was reenacted by the people themselves, that we might record it for you. See the people in your mind's eye crowded into the school, opening their meeting, as they always do, with the battle hymn of the Republic. See the mayor and official guests. See the women seated up front. Hear the principal, Professor Harkey, call the meeting to order.
Patron and friends, at this time, it is a great pleasure for me to present to you, His Honor, the Mayor, R.E. Glenn.
As Mayor Glenn gets to his feet, the crowd is tense. What will he say? Do they dare to hope? Will he give them any encouragement at all? This, in his own words, is what he said.
"Friends, I have good news for you. Tomorrow night, the city council will vote to bring you into the city limits."
And so, the women did it. Later, the city of Lawton endorsed their action, voting a special bond issue to put in water, highways, sewer facilities, and electricity. Already, Lawton View is cut with ditches to make way for these improvements. And how do the people feel about it out there? We went out with our recording machine and asked them. Asked Jimmy Hinson, the grocer, who meets enough people over his counter to know.
"I've seen people come into my store and was real happy because they was going to have things in our part of town that other people was enjoying too."
Sylvester Thornton, who hauls water for a living, is going to be put out of business, but just the same,
"I can't express how glad I was when I saw the first load of pipe hauled out here and dumped alongside the streets, because I knew then that it wouldn't be long before that we'll have water out here so that we wouldn't have to haul any more water."
And with the water due any day now, many Lawton viewers, like Charlie Venice Marshall, can't wait to invest in their new future.
"I went down the Montgomery Ward, and I bought my bathroom tub and hot water heater and sink, and so I'm all ready to put them in just as soon as the line get up to my place. I had to pay for them on time, and I don't mind spending the money one bit."
Already, the anticipation of the great new day Charlie Venice is preparing for has made a difference in the attitude of the school children. Professor Hockey has noticed it.
"We can notice the condition of the children, the happiness and the peace and the sense of belonging that they've acquired since this thing has happened. And I'm sure that it will grow by leaps and bounds in the time to come."
And as these evidences of the magic they work together greet the women of Lawton and the people of Lawton View, far from concluding their cooperation, they plan to go on together to other things. They've plotted a park for the children, which they'll help equip. They plan to move a wooden structure close by to serve as a community center and nursery for working mothers. However, it remains for old Dan English, who earlier told us of his water-hauling days, remember, to put the fitting final touch on this portion of our program. Said old Dan to us when we confronted him with our microphone,
"I feel much helped up, and I'm 70 years old, and I expect to go from Lawton View to heaven. And I believe that's going to be a little heaven here on earth for me."
A little heaven on earth. Today, that's how Dan English feels about his hometown of Lawton View. And now back to our field reporter, Elmore McKee.
Friends, this was one of the Lawton projects honored recently by a prize from the General Federation of Women's Clubs in a Build a Better Community contest. Prizes in each state were made possible by the generosity of the Kroger stores of Cincinnati. But the women of Lawton did more than simply build a better place to live. By accepting responsibility and giving the needed leadership, they not only strengthened the democratic processes in their own hometown, but also help strengthen freedom in our country as a whole. To me, what two people told me before I left best sums up what I mean. First, Mrs. Weller, now president of the Women's Forum, whose project it was.
"I think we women have learned that when we work together and for each other, that we gain the solution of problems that otherwise might seem almost insurmountable."
And finally, perhaps speaking for all the men, Mayor Glenn.
"But I guess it all proves again to us men that when women get together and make up their minds to do something, there's absolutely no stopping them."
Such is the story of the women of Lawton, Oklahoma, and what they did to improve one of the sore spots of their city. For some light on the national significance of this story, let's turn to the 20th Century Fund, the research foundation that is collaborating with NBC in producing these programs. And let's have a word from Mr. Charles P. Taft, distinguished lawyer, member of the city council of his native city of Cincinnati, Ohio, former head of the Federal Council of the Churches of Christ in America, and a member of the Board of Trustees of the 20th Century Fund. Mr. Taft, how does this Lawton story strike you?
"Well, this is a fine, straightforward sample of what aroused citizens can accomplish under our democratic system of government. This kind of action and this kind of spirit serve to keep our democracy alive and real and form the best possible foundation for an offensive on totalitarians that would destroy it."
Does it seem at all strange to you, Mr. Taft, that in this case the prime movers were not the men of the community, but the women?
"Not for a minute. They did the same kind of a job in Cincinnati. Good citizenship means more to them than any party line. They have ideals, they have energy, and they're really more practical than the men."
"Hmm."
"The men think they're being practical when they let themselves be stopped by cliches and bogeymen and go right on accepting outrageous situations as inevitable, not the women. Something of the little lady from Philadelphia in the Peterkin papers with her common-sense solutions is good for us men."
"Well, that's fine for you to say that for the women. One thing interested me, Mr. Taft. I happen to be a city boy myself. I've always thought of slums as something primarily connected with our very large cities. Yet here we have the moderate-sized city of Lawton, Oklahoma, population just around 30,000, and it had what undeniably seemed to be slum conditions in a settlement on its outskirts."
"Well, Mr. Grauer, I think a lot of Americans share that same mistaken notion of connecting slums necessarily with very large cities and with their centers. Certainly our big cities have them, and they're well publicized. But our 20th Century Fund survey, called America's Needs and Resources, showed that actually our smaller cities may have an even higher percentage of slums. The 1940 census indicated that about one quarter of metropolitan city dwellings were in slums and blighted areas. But in urban places outside the metropolitan districts, a still higher percentage of dwellings were in these substandard neighborhoods.
So, even if some of us Americans live in smaller communities, we may well look around us to see if there aren't some conditions that need cleaning up right in our own backyard, so to speak.
We may well indeed. And we shouldn't become too much discouraged if we meet with evasion and indifference and ponderous official reasons why nothing can possibly be done about a particular situation. I certainly could sympathize with Mrs. Weller when she burst out in meeting.
Listen, you've given us all the reasons why this thing cannot be done. Isn't there at least one good reason why it can and should be done?
There's a truly American call to action. This Lawton experience brings out another point that is important for those who want to improve conditions in their own communities.
And what's that point, Mr. Taft?
Well, this whole Lawton story illustrates the fact that you can't think of a city's welfare just inside its own city limits. You have to consider its whole setting. One point stressed in the fund's study of America's needs and resources was that projects for clearing slums, redeveloping rundown neighborhoods, and planning improvements have to be part of an orderly plan for the whole community, including its suburbs.
The whole community. That does seem important, Mr. Taft. And I like your earlier reminder that we shouldn't be too much discouraged if we do find obstacles, particularly at the beginning stages, in the path of this sort of progress.
They're always in front of you, but teamwork and community spirit, as our story today so cheeringly shows, can overcome them. The General Federation of Women's Clubs and Kroger's, too, which gave the prizes, and that's a Cincinnati outfit,
right, is
to be congratulated for encouraging projects for all kinds of civic improvement in communities throughout our nation. The projects themselves are important, but perhaps even more vital for the survival and growth of our democracy is the spirit that starts and finishes them.
Well, thank you, Mr. Charles P. Taft, trustee of the 20th Century Fund, for those comments that call our attention to the essence of the Lawton, Oklahoma story, which we've heard today. And again, all honor to those fine women of a fine community and to the national movement of which they're a part for showing us what can be accomplished by American democracy in action.
Living 1951 in conjunction with the 20th Century Fund has presented another in our special series, The People Act. If you wish to receive a copy of today's script or to ask questions pertaining to the possible application of the Lawton View story to your own community, you're invited to write to the 20th Century Fund, 330 West 42nd Street, New York 18. We repeat that address. The 20th Century Fund, 330 West 42nd Street, New York 18. The fund will be glad to send you a script or put you in touch with an agency that may help you in your situation. 1 week from today, our program will be heard an hour and a half earlier over many of these same stations. Consult your local newspaper and join us again next week when our field reporter will introduce us to some people who put democracy to work in Baltimore, Maryland. The People Act is transcribed for NBC and the 20th Century Fund by the Program Unit for Living 1951. Wade Arnold, producer and editor. Edward King, director. Lou Hazem, writer. Elmore McKee, field reporter. Ben Grauer, narrator. And William Schwartau, recording engineer.